We're back. I'm Paula Gordon, Bill Russell, Susan Faludi. We're talking about the big ideas that you have in the Terror Dream, and I promised Bill Russell, so I'll be a good person and give it back to you.
You answered a question or provided a representation that I've been unconsciously looking for the last 6 years. I have been thinking deranged. I have been thinking maddening, madness, lunacy. Actually, I hadn't been thinking deranged because that was the word you chose to describe the media reaction and the public reaction. Partly, I think, you know, as the public because of the myths you talk about, but also because they were well led and well instructed in that derangement.
Or poorly led and well instructed.
Well, yes. But the derangement seems to me to be central. All the other. I mean, there's a great deal in what you're talking about, with the derangement, the cultural, the social derangement that was consequent, starting within 5 minutes of the event.
Right. The event being the attacks of 9/11 in 2001 in America.
Right. Continues. I mean, there have been a few people who have tried to punch through that. Most of them. And we'll talk about the reviews of your book. have been savaged for their efforts, but I found that to me was an appropriate word. And since you found it and I hadn't,
deranged.
How did you get there?
Well, you know, I wrote this book because I wanted to try and understand what happened to us as a culture after 9/11. Because if you go back and you look, and as you say, right from the get-go, you notice something very strange. It's not. So much of our reaction was not as if we were reacting to the actual threat. We seemed to fall into this odd fever dream where our politicians and our pundits were reenacting some Wild West drama, spouting all this vigilante rhetoric about smoke them out of their holes and shoot them between the eyes. The latter was a quote from a New York Post commentator. And all this talk about how the war on terror was going to be a return to our days of taming the frontier and fighting the Indians, and a lot of chatter about how we were scared housewife security moms wanted protection, and how men would be protecting the family from savage attacks in the home by terrorists. So it was all very peculiar, because here we have hijackers aiming the planes at the symbols of commercial and military power, yet we seem to be reacting as a culture as if they were aimed at our home and hearth.
What happened to the adults in this drama? I'm sure it's as if adults forgot to show up through this entire event, and it continues to be the case.
Right, it's real cowboy and Indian, and it's
childish. It's puerile. It's remarkable.
Well, in some ways, it's adolescent.
But I'm serious about that. There have to be some, you know, out of 300 plus or minus million Americans, plus a few other differently interested foreigners. Mm-hmm. There are adults. There are people who could see what was going on, and yet we never saw them or heard from them.
Right. Well, they weren't at the helm. But beyond that, the mythology that we reached for, this sort of consoling fiction of the protective John Wayne figure and the imperiled maiden is our central mythology, and it is essentially an adolescent mythology. It's the lone man who's basically an adolescent, who's not in the drama we tell ourselves that came out of the Victorian era that we've been working on for all these years, is a story about sort of a Natty Bumppo Hawkeye character from The Last of the Mohicans who does not have a relationship with a woman it's the old Leslie Fiedler story of Huck Finn or of a perpetual boy who rescues women but then doesn't ever really have a long-term relationship with them.
You quote, obviously you've read Richard Slotkin's work and dug through it in detail. Richard is somewhere between a friend and a close acquaintance.
But he is magisterial, as you point out.
Yes, I actually had him read with much fear and trembling since I hugely admire him, had him review the manuscript.
And I suspect he was probably very pleased with it.
He said so in public. He said
to us that, I mean, he says in his work, he said specifically to us that the American myth, in his view, you know, came to an absolute terminal halt with the Vietnam War. We wore it out. Now, that now, I think, is sort of contradicted by what you're saying, but he goes on to say that any candidate myth for a new American myth, and myth in this context is not, we're not talking about fairy tales, we're talking about the underlying worldview that the community inhabits, the space, the world as we see it, is that any myth has to deal with racism, American myth, the profound effects of racism in this country, and violence. Who gets to use it against whom?
Right.
And what you're dealing with, writing about, of course, is the latter piece of that. And it seems, based on that analysis and your analysis, we don't have a new myth. We're still sort of floundering around with the old one.
I mean, the old myth isn't working for us, if it ever did, which I would argue it was always pretty broken.
It's gotten us into some pretty bad places.
Right. And this time was no exception.
I would add that perhaps thinking along with you, I would enrich what Dr. Slotkin said by saying, yes, color racism, yes, violence, and Susan Faludi, gender, about which we'll speak more when we return in just a moment.